Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today we're going to be talking about legal marketing, initiating change in a tumultuous market. Our guest today is a dear friend, Paula Sarinski. Paula is the co-founder and chief strategist of Structura Strategy Group, a professional services marketing advisory. Paula is known for expertise in branding, strategy, marketing, content, communications, and digital and technology platforms. As a former global CMO, Paula has held leadership positions at professional services firms, including A2 Integrity, a preeminent global risk advisory firm, and law firms, including Morgan Lewis, Morvillo Abramowitz, Fried Frank, and Cadwallader. Welcome to the show, Paula.
Thanks, Guy. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back. And I know a lot has changed since we last spoke to you. So why don't we talk just briefly about Structura and what you guys are doing there before we dive into the topic, if you don't mind.
Sure, I'd love to. So in April of 2022, Lynn Tillotson Staley and I formed Structura Strategy Group as a marketing advisory, a consultancy. From my perspective, we look at and we work with senior leadership teams and we look at what their marketing departments and the firm is doing with respect to marketing services, the structure, the website, the branding, the activities they're undertaking, their position in the marketplace competitively. And then we work with them on roadmaps to see what is missing, what should be added, prioritize, and then help them implement so that they could really get foundational growth strategies that will put them on the track to where they really want to be. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a great ride.
I love it. All right, so let's switch to the topic here, initiating change in a tumultuous market. So you recently wrote about change and becoming who you want to be, both personally and professionally, versus being too attached to who you've been. Tell us a little bit about that and how did that come to be?
Yeah, you know, at the beginning of the year, I thought about doing one of those LinkedIn posts about resolutions, but I didn't want to just say, you know, let's do this or do that. And then I found this stick drawing, this visual of a standing stick figure pulling a rope, forging ahead while dragging a seated stick figure. And the visual had the words, you'll never become who you want to be if you're too attached to who you've been. And that really resonated with me because I thought beyond a resolution, you really need to look back and come up with a plan. And I started to write as I do when I hear little snippets of things that are of interest to me. To achieve any type of significant change, you need to step back. And we look at that as a roadmap, but it really doesn't matter. Whether it's a personal change, you want to move, you want to change your job, you want to go on a diet, professional change, change related to the business operations of your company or your firm, you really need to take stock of where you are, where you were, where you really wanted to be, and then put that constructive change into practice. And this is sometimes really hard for people. There's a great fear of letting go of past programs, of processes, of perceptions, and even people when you do this type of self-assessment and audit. Quite honestly, from a legal marketing perspective, if you're spending money on marketing and it's not making an impact, if the money you're spending is not realizing a return on your investment, and if your structure is inhibiting your ability to try new things, it really might be time to make a change. Because time, money, and resources are not reasons to just let things go, and each is not a reason to drag dead weight around. And that's really where this whole idea came from.
I love it. I think it's so hard to do that kind of audit, but I agree. I think it's something that every professional and individual should be doing at least once a year, I would say. And for a law firm or a professional services firm, it's the same kind of thing. There's so many firms out there that just keep trying the same old thing over and over and over again, and it's not working, yet they're not changing. So for a law firm specifically, do you think it's possible to change, and especially in a market like we're in right now, where there's so much uncertainty and so many things are up in the air?
Good question. And I actually think that that's the exact time that you need to do the audit. As you were commenting earlier, I was thinking about a public company and the need for an audit committee to do financial audit each year. And why not a marketing audit each year? Like, you're doing that already. You're in sync with it. Like, think about it. And when times are good, and particularly when times are bad, you really have to look at yourself. And when times are bad, identify the gaps and the opportunities, and then take real chances when you move forward with that. You know, I was recently at the Thomson Reuters Marketing Partner Forum, and there was a lot of conversation around planning in a slow or a down market. And one of the things that I think, beyond really assessing who you are and what you're doing, really think about what your firm does best. What are your firm's core competencies? And really exploit what you're known for. When times are getting tough, you really want to double down on those practice areas that probably are contributing to revenue and gross margin to your firm. And while it may be tempting to launch something new, those new things may drain your team and the resources in money, time, and people who could otherwise be deployed against your core. You never want your core competencies to be vulnerable to somebody else stepping in and all of a sudden taking that business from you. But you also want to look at new areas that can be explored as long as they support your core. The other thing in a slow and sluggish market is really pay attention to the data that you have, because there's an abundance of data throughout most law firms. In fact, one of the things that I learned last year at the Marketing Partner Forum is that clients are saying, you have so much data, can you share it with us? But within the company, all of the different teams have different data. Learn where they squirrel it all away. Know what you can get from finance. Know what you can get from IT. Know what you can get from your client teams. And leverage it all and support your core areas and your lawyers. Support those core competencies and really look at the data in order to help you with that. And you'll see some surprises. I just want to take one short sidebar, because many firms all have CRMs. And there's been a lot of talk lately that CRM is dead. Don't call it a CRM. And okay. I don't know about you, but they're not dead. There are a lot of people to a CRM. And
absolutely.
You have to really look at the CRM as to what it could do for your firm, because a CRM is not a marketing toy. It's a firm tool. And it
absolutely
needs to be fed. It needs to be fed with data. Now, some CRMs have the ability to have ERM and scraping to get data in the system. Others, you know, firms actually do keep opportunities databases. Some use them to get the who knows who. You know, they're not just there to hold a list, an RSVP, or an activity. They're really there to analyze your relationships and your opportunities, see if you're going after profitable business, business that closes quickly. You really need to make sure that everyone's held accountable. And if everyone is held accountable to inputting and using the CRM, then everyone can see how valuable a tool it is. So it upsets me to hear that people want to walk away from it. Don't walk away from it. Engage it. Really, you know, exploit it. Use it to its fullest potential.
Do you want to start a successful podcast that will generate leads for your law firm? At Good2Be Social, we work with many different law firms and help them to produce and promote their podcasts. Podcasts today are more popular than ever. In fact, today's internet users routinely use podcasts on a monthly, weekly, or even daily basis to stay informed and be entertained. As this medium continues to grow, law firms don't want to fall behind and need to move beyond traditional written content and onto the digital airwaves. Unfortunately, when it comes to podcasting, many legal marketers aren't sure about where to start. With our latest ebook, The Law Firm Guide to Podcasting, readers can learn how to choose a format, a topic, and a name that will get you noticed, how to select and reach out to potential guests, the technology and the recording basis you know to produce a successful show, as well as how to measure the success of your podcast. So hurry now, go to the Good to Be Social website and look for the Law Firm Guide to Podcasting ebook. I couldn't agree with you more. So there was a lot there that you said. Let me break it down into two and talk to you a little bit more about this. So let's put the data and CRM conversation aside for a second and go back to what you're saying in terms of a yearly marketing audit. I think that's a fantastic opportunity and something that every law firm should be doing. But it's interesting what you mentioned in that, you know, law firms should really stick to what their capabilities are, which I completely agree with. But if you see what's going on in the market right now, there is so much M&A activity going on, and it seems that law firms are not necessarily sticking to their capabilities. They're buying or merging or acquiring other firms that maybe have capabilities that they don't have. It's confusing to me. Like everyone said, we're going to be going into a recession and you're going to see a down market here. I'm not necessarily seeing it. I know, you know, a couple of the big firms had layoffs, but for the most part, what I'm seeing is a lot of mergers, a lot of people jumping from one firm to the other, and, you know, a lot of activity going on. So how do you see it?
We did see a lot of merger activity and we are still reading about it. And I bet there were so many more that were in conversations that just didn't happen and we haven't read about them, but you hear rumblings. Mergers are good if they allow different firms to enter different geographies and to add on practices that reinforce their core. I think together they can be more powerful than they can separately. Mergers, though, are horribly distracting within the firm to the partners, to the teams involved. And I think that that's the real hindrance in a down market when you're trying to, you know, running in place to keep things moving. And then all of a sudden you have merger activity and you have to split people apart. Like who's going to handle merger integration and who's going to handle the business of the day? Like when I go back in time, when I worked at Daimler-Benz, I was there during the Daimler-Chrysler merger of equals, which I don't believe in the concept of merger of equals, but it took away a lot of time and effort. People really had to work on different things. I think mergers are overall good if they're done for the right reasons and if they're done in order to be stronger together. We all know that sometimes out of weakness, someone will want to merge and then they just lose a lot of people and time and place in the market. Yeah.
I agree with that. And I think there is some of that. You know, the other thing that's interesting in the market today is I'm seeing a lot of marketing professionals switching firms and trying out new opportunities. What is your sense of what's going on there?
Yeah, you know, during the pandemic, law firms did many cutbacks and they cut a lot of marketing and business development professionals. And I think that a lot of those cuts were done at the early part of the pandemic, and then they really had to come back and staff up because you realize you really need these people. You know, there are lawyers and there are other professionals in law firms, and marketing and BD people are professionals in their own right, and they serve a very valuable purpose in a firm and actually should have a seat at leadership tables of law firms. I have heard from headhunters that there are many, many more open positions than there are people to fill them, right? And I've also heard of salary levels increasing. And as we enter a softening market, maybe, we're not sure about the softening market anymore.
I agree.
You know, salary levels may adjust, and that would be a good thing. But yes, many people are shifting gears and taking advantage of opportunities that they may want to pursue elsewhere.
So then let's talk about the other piece that you mentioned, because I think it's incredibly important. And I completely agree with you. There's no way that CRM is dead. If anything, if you really know how to use the CRM and are using it properly, it's probably more important than ever, right? And it all goes back to client data or prospect data. And you know, you mentioned something that I'm a huge believer in, which is really using your marketing dollars and your marketing resources to go after the business that you know you're best suited for, right? And a lot of times that means it's not about leads, it's about revenue. So how do you take your existing clients and how do you expand your share of wallet with them? what kind of things you can do to cross-sell your services, or even if you're not cross-selling, getting more business from your existing clients. And a great way to do that is with data, right? The more you know about a client, the more you know about what issues they care about, what problems they're dealing with, what opportunities they might be able to realize, the more that you can become an indispensable part of their team and the trusted advisor that all lawyers want to be and should be, right?
Yeah.
But if firms are not using their CRMs properly, if they're either not training their attorneys to use them or have antiquated CRM platforms that really don't do what they're supposed to do, then, you know, there's a problem. I agree with you. I think you have to focus more than ever in an uncertain market and really go after those opportunities that are in a position to provide and create the most revenue for the firm.
I totally agree. I think that the smartest marketers are orchestrating multi-channel efforts that can lead to market industry and key account growth. And whether it's through client teams or account-based marketing, they're looking at their data to generate demand through relationships and follow-through. And they're really intensifying the touch points to their best clients, their referral sources, and the sectors. And they're seeing the similarities on where they can really leverage and grow. And I think you have to be willing to get the right data in your platform and use it correctly. And those firms that have the platforms and aren't using it are foolish. It's right there. Input your data. You know, I was very fortunate when I left the legal industry and I went into the consulting side of things. We used Microsoft Dynamics and we had a very robust pipeline opportunities database. And everyone was held accountable to get their data in. And if you were a dinosaur and didn't want to do it, you had to have a proxy that would put your data in. What did we get from that? We were able to see where the opportunities were and anticipate growth. We were able to see how long it took things to go through the pipeline. We were able to see the revenue stream and the profitability. We were able to shift people to go after things that may make more sense. And we could see which practices, offices, and people were most productive. And we could really keep an eye on our referral sources and how they really play into the whole process. It was fascinating, and I really feel fortunate that I had the opportunity to really learn it and do it and now, you know, speak about it.
I love it. So you mentioned the Marketing Partner Forum. You know, it's a forum I've actually never attended, always wanted to, but for whatever reason, never had the time. What else did you learn about there? What other new things or interesting topics did you hear about?
So, yeah, there are three topics that really were bantied about a lot. One is the number of people that are doing new websites. And there was a lot of conversation about website redesign and how to manage the process. Yet within lots of those conversations, there was a lot of confusion about branding versus your website. A website is a tool that helps to communicate your brand. When you do a new website, that is not branding. That is doing a website redesign. You still need to have a very strong, robust brand that has a brand soul and that has positioning points. And then your website is your command central. It's the 24/7 storefront that reinforces who you are and what you represent to your clients and prospects. It's incredibly important for traditional marketing efforts and for digital efforts. And too often the branding exercises were getting confused with website redesign. So that was one topic that was major at the forum.
That's interesting.
Second, the elephant in the room, sales. Okay, I've been around law firms a long time. Do not fear sales and selling. Dedicated, skilled sales professionals bring expertise to the firm that others simply don't have. And when salespeople partner with lawyers, business development teams, even client teams, they can help drive revenue. Sales teams spot and find prospects and opportunities. They follow through and turn an opportunity into a win and a win into significant revenue. With sales teams, you can let your lawyers be lawyers assisted by qualified sales professionals. One of the data points that came out of the Marketing Partner Forum, apparently a third of Am Law 100 firms are starting to include salespeople among their ranks. I think that's
really, that's really very interesting. Wow.
Surprisingly, right?
And what are these people called? Like, what kind of titles do they have?
Salespeople, sales professionals.
We're using the word sales now in the legal industry? Amazing.
Yes. And sales is not business development. Business development people can support sales. those firms that say, oh, our BT people do sales, that's not what it's about. Real sales professionals. Yeah.
Interesting. Totally. Very interesting.
Cool. And then the last topic that I know we could have a lot of fun about is AI and ChatGPT.
Yep.
Okay, I spent almost 7 years in the corporate investigations industry. Rules, algorithms, machine learning, and AI were all used in order to really handle huge, often disparate databases in order to find actionable intelligence and connections. So I'm just putting that on the table. But now with ChatGPT, we're seeing something a little bit different. We're seeing something that real people can engage with and be a part of. It's public. And beyond the Google searches that you and I and everybody would do and play with and move on, ChatGPT jumps. It's fast, it's comprehensive, and they're playing with it. Now, it may not be completely accurate. I don't know if you read my last article where I went into ChatGPT and I said, who is Paula Zirinsky? And I received a bio for Susan Zirinsky, the CBS executive who was headed up CBS News for many years. And I thought, okay, if someone didn't know me, they might think that I was a producer, but I'm not. That wasn't me. ChatGPT is really based on the input that they put in, the type of data that gets placed into it and the comprehensiveness of it. You know, I also asked, I didn't come up in search at all with anything. And they apologized. It's very polite when you play within it. And I asked, do you use LinkedIn? And they explained how LinkedIn is such a gigantic tool. But maybe they didn't completely use LinkedIn. So I know we're getting another version that's coming out. Putting all of the limitations aside and inaccuracy, it's a tool that can be enormously helpful. And we've all read about newsrooms using it to create content. And recently we saw how CNET was going back to some of those stories that were written by ChatGPT because they realized how inaccurate they were. I went to a talk recently that Tina Brown spoke about it. And Tina Brown put into ChatGPT, write an article in the voice of Tina Brown about Meghan Markle. And she said what she got out was incredible, and she forecast tens of thousands of people from newsrooms losing their jobs. Okay, that might be a little bit of an overstatement. That might not happen, but we're seeing it in a lot of ways. And so I started thinking about, like, how would I really use it? And I could see a lot of use cases for ChatGPT. Let's say I have an article. You know, I come out of PR before I did marketing, and let's say I have a byline article or even an editorial piece where we did an interview with a lawyer quote. And you have it and you want very quickly to get a short abstract for use on the website as a post. Why not use it there? As long as you still review it and make sure everything's accurate and focus to what your strategy dictates. And that's where you have to be very careful. Because even with real people writing these things, I've reviewed many website posts of articles that just didn't get what I would look for. Does it reflect what the article was about? Does it reflect strategically what we spoke about in the interview that might not have gotten into the article? It's an opportunity to put it on your website. And does it really satisfy digital considerations, SEO, search terms, what have you? And so when you use ChatGPT as a tool, not as the end product, I think it could be very, very valuable. So that's one use case I think people might be using it for. Then I started thinking about websites and personalization. You know, there are a lot of very powerful website platforms like Sitecore that have personalization. And a few months back, I went to a different Thomson Reuters conference in Toronto, and I mentioned the integration of a firm's CRM with their website. So if you sent a reporter an outbound email with an article, you could see whether that reporter clicked, opened, and went into your website to read it. Okay, that's good so far. But then you could also see the path of that journalist in your website so that if the article was on topic A, but they read three different articles on topic B, you could see that, and you might inform your PR team, call that reporter, they're really doing a story on something else. So that's possible today. You don't need ChatGPT for that. If you have different platforms, different website platforms and CRMs, you could still do that. But let's take it one step further with ChatGPT to personalization in Sitecore. We all on websites tag practices and people within our website so that if you look at one thing, it's going to give you other recommendations based on what you come up with, right? And you have a limited number of things that you can tag. It's very easy to do. In personalization, you look at your individual journey. So, Guy, if you were looking at my website, we would see the exact path that you took and things that you were looking at and all of the keywords that match to that. For a law firm team, it's literally impossible to get all of these terms in so that you could connect through and tag and show content. With ChatGPT, you can. Almost instantaneously, they could look through all of the words and the things you're looking at in order to feed up content that you might be interested in real time. And with personalization, generally, it's your second journey, your second visit to the website, where it reflects your first journey and what you looked at. But with ChatGPT, we can eliminate that. It can come up instantaneously. And it can go one step further. It can let the content creators know what you've been looking at. It could let you know what was fed or what was missing. And it can actually start pieces for you that you might want to review and then add to your website if you know people are looking at it. It's really powerful. I'm excited. I think that it could do some very interesting things.
You know, I think the same things about ChatGPT. I think it's interesting technology. I think it's in its infancy stages. It can be a tool to help you create content, but only as a draft. I would never publish a piece of content, you know, straight out of ChatGPT. And in fact, Google has gotten really smart and is able to figure out content that is AI created and actually penalize that type of content. So for lawyers and law firms that think, well, I don't need to write blog posts anymore, I'll just have ChatGPT do it. No luck there. Big mistake.
It's totally a tool, not the product. Just as we know and we add footnotes, I think full disclosure, you have to say this started with ChatGPT. It needs to be disclosed.
I agree with you. I think where AI, I think, has its biggest promise is in automation and personalization. And I totally agree with you. I think you can use an AI tool to better serve or direct a website visitor that's coming in, whether it's through a chatbot or some other type of personalization technology, so that it can serve whatever information that visitor is looking for and provide high-level answers of things that, you know, will direct them to either a human being or another series of resources that are human created. So I think people need to be careful. I think they need to take it one step at a time. But I do think, you know, there's a lot of opportunity down the road. I just don't think it's there yet. And I don't know that it'll ever be there where it would actually replace a human being. So,
yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it would ever replace a human being. And I think that firms need good strategy. They need strategy on how it's going to be used, not just in marketing, but in their legal work, on papers that are drafted. And they need to communicate whether it's used or not. And accuracy is everything. So you still need to go in and check the work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Paula. Well, it's been a pleasure as usual. Lots of great things. And I love all the great information you shared with us today. I know you're busy, so I'm going to let you go. But before I let you go, you know, what would be one word of advice you might have to our listeners who, you know, are sort of trying to figure out how to take advantage of this uncertain market and make some real changes from a marketing perspective?
Right. So I'm going to go back all the way to the beginning where we started. You know, effective marketing relies on organized, prioritized, and focused strategy. You can't get away from that. And real change can come when you really have the self-awareness that enables you up, open yourself to infinite possibilities. You know, don't be afraid of what you're going to see. Because in the end, you'll never become who you want to be if you're too attached to who you've been.
I love it. That's good advice for law firms, and that's good advice for individuals as well. All right. Well, Paula, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure having you as always. For our listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you did and you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, just go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there. You can also check out some great past episodes that we have. Paula, thank you again. Wishing you the best of luck with Certura, and love to have you back in the future. I always find what you have to share very interesting, and I'm sure our listeners do as well.
Thank you, Guy, and give my best to the entire Good to Be Social team.
Will do. All right. Thank you, Paula. Thank you,
Bye-bye.
Everyone. Have a great day.